Welcome to this podcast from Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club of California, by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. This podcast is made possible through support from the members of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club. To learn more about events or membership, visit us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum or join us on Facebook, MySpace, and LinkedIn.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate on civic issues. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum. And I am Marcia Gagliardi, founder of tablehopper.com. Tonight, for Top Chefs Tell All, we've assembled a stellar cast of chef contestants on Bravo TV's Top Chef television show to give us the insider info on the San Francisco food scene and what it takes to make it in the restaurant world. These three young superstars have risen to the top through culinary cunning, but what's the secret ingredient that keeps them rising to the top in a field of competitors? Plus, we'll get the lowdown on the SF food scene as only someone who's been on the other side of the kitchen door can dish it out and take home tips to fire up your own kitchen routine. So tonight, first we host Zoe Antonitsis.
Perfect.
Hey, you know, as a Gagliardi, I know how it goes. She's
good.
The chef restaurant consultant currently at Zazu Restaurant in Santa Rosa. Then we have Jennifer Beastie, chef restaurant consultant. Formerly of Coco 500 and current proprietor of Savage Feast Catering. And lastly, we have Ryan Scott. Yeah. Our gentleman holding down the panel here. He is the executive chef partner at Mission Beach Cafe. So please welcome our panel. All right, well, let's dive in here with some questions. I promise to be nice. First, I'd like to ask a few questions about being a chef. And I think this is one I'd love to hear. Let's start with you, Jennifer, on what advice would you give to anyone considering a career as a chef?
I think I often get this question, and since I've been on the show, I've had a lot of young women contact me and ask me, say that they love food and that they are considering becoming chefs and considering going to culinary school. And what I always suggest is that you go out to eat a lot. And I mean, even if I know a lot of young people don't have money to do that, but research a restaurant, find a restaurant you really like, eat there, befriend the chef, or try to meet the cooks that work there. And then spend some time there, you know, like commit to a weekend or 4 days and go and work in the kitchen and see what it's really like. And understand what kind of commitment it takes to go from being a line cook to becoming a chef. And do that before you go to culinary school. Or maybe not even go to culinary school.
You'll save 50 grand.
Yeah. If you have 50 grand, just put it in the bank and go to Europe and go work in Paris and go work in Barcelona and go work in some good restaurants and spend your money that way and work for free.
All right.
Or try to get paid. Try to be getting it.
Good luck.
So, Ryan, especially since you've now been starting at Mission Beach Cafe, I'm wondering what inspires your cooking and keeps you creative?
Eating around. Tastes a lot. We've been doing the Top Chef tour for the last 5 weeks, and I've done some stuff with Stephanie. We were in Lafayette. Where were we at? Fremont. We were in Fremont, and the things that Steph was doing there inspired me to do dishes on my menu the same way, and I was in Denver, and I ran across all these great bison dishes and some ingredients that they put on them with and chutneys and so on. And I get inspired by cooking with other chefs, reading magazines, of course, books, and when you get a chance, watching TV and trying to catch here and there and what people are doing. But it's definitely the inside of the chefs. And when you see them sitting down at tables and talking food, and it's kind of the way the house was when we were having dinner at nighttime. We would just go off on food and we made dinner for each other. And that's what really inspired a lot of people. So that's what inspires me.
Nice. Now, chefs are famed for their cooking secrets. Zoe, we'd love to hear if you could share a tip that perhaps you've never told the public before. maybe give the at-home chefs a little go-to trick that you keep up your sleeve.
Go-to trick.
What is it?
I don't know. I'm sure I've said this actually many times before to the public, but I think really the trick to cooking is to realize that it's don't panic. Like, it's food. You're making food to eat. That's like what you're doing. You're there to make food, to eat, to enjoy it, to have fun with who you're with, your friends, your family, whatnot. That's what it's about. All the other stuff is garnish, basically. So, like, you know, I mean, just, you know, care. Care about the product. Care about, you know, who you're supporting, who you're buying from, what product you're buying, how you cook it. I mean, I talk about this with my cooks all the time is, like, you know, treat a head of garlic with as much respect as foie gras. I mean, it's just as important. So, you know, but mainly, you know, don't freak out. It's food. You know, it's everyone does it. Everyone needs it. Care and have fun.
So does that help you in the kitchen when you're having a
I try
a
to
moment?
Tell myself yeah. that. Uh-huh. Yeah. Daily. Yeah.
Is it the mantra? It's food.
Yeah. It's food. Just food. It's food. Just food. It's just food. It's just food. Yeah.
Ryan and Jen, do either of you have any little tips or tricks you care to?
It's funny. I, when I'm yelling, I'm telling my cooks not to yell. I find myself, don't yell, and I'm the one yelling in the kitchen. I think don't be afraid of salt. I think a lot of people are afraid of salt. I mean, the trick to cooking is actually just seasoning food. And a lot of people are afraid to over-season. You know, if you do a beginning, middle, and end, you'll find yourself not adding so much towards the end or so much towards the beginning. Season a little bit in the beginning when you sear it. Flip the protein over. Put a little bit of salt where all the juices will come up to the top. It'll dissolve and give it a crust. And once you slice it, put a little in the eye of the protein, and you're good to go. Yeah. Salt.
It's a book. Jen?
That's why we're here. Just go out to eat.
Eating is the answer.
That's good.
So, all right. Now we're going to have a humility moment. Let's hear about one of your biggest disasters in the kitchen. I think this would be a fun one from each of you. Ryan, go ahead and lead the
I'm trying to narrow it down.
I heard a sigh, so.
Oh, my God. I was doing a demo with Antonia in Denver the other day, and my product blew up on stage. And Antonia looks at me and she's like, was that supposed to happen? I'm like, no, it wasn't. I'm not Richard. I'm not putting chemicals in something. And then the whole time, I ended up kissing the whole front row and gave them all my business cards and stuff and told them, you know, I'll take care of your dry cleaning bill. I don't know what it was, but something leaked from the top. I know, this is funny. You should have been there.
Is it a blender?
No.
Do we have this on footage?
I was doing a pickled dish that I do a lot. It's pickled cherry tomatoes. And they cleaned the hood systems that night. And the guy told me, he's like, hey, watch out. There's some stuff leaking from it. Well, I had the hot oil. I pulled it off, and I was going to add the oil and the vinegar together. But something dropped from there and exploded, and I had oil all over me. That was a little embarrassing. And then taking photos of people with the stained coat all day was kind of funny. And then all of them wanted me to sign their shirts that had oil all over it. That was pretty bad.
I thought I saw this on eBay. Yeah.
That was a bad one. I've got some with Gary Danko, but I'm not going to go there. I'm going to leave those. I'm going to leave those be.
Ladies.
Okay, this is definitely not the worst thing that I've ever done, but this is maybe a little bit entertaining, which is why we're here. So when I first came to San Francisco, I worked at Bizu, which was what Coco 500 was originally. And Jen was the chef at the time. And everyone burns bacon. This is like, everyone burns bacon. Like, all the it's one of those things that just always burns. It, yeah. I don't know why, but it just
nuts
always does. It's just, it's like when bacon goes in, it's 90% of the time going to burn. Like, it doesn't matter who's
even
cooking
with a timer.
It. Yeah. So, whatever. I was new, had just moved to San Francisco, and I burned a whole bunch of bacon and was like, okay, this nobody can know that this happened. So
terrified
I would.
Of me.
I was terrified of Jen. Terrified. So, so I would take. I took the sheet pan of bacon, burnt sheet pan of bacon, out of the oven, and I would put it underneath the oven, like on the floor. Like I took it out and threw it under the oven, and then got new bacon and put it in, and just tried to act like nothing happened. So that kind of stuff happened.
Did you find
all
it?
The time.
Like a bad kid.
No, she never found it. No.
All right.
We're in hell to pay.
The bacon is still there.
Food costs went up that month.
Yeah.
Jennifer, lay one on us.
I think when it was on my internship in New Orleans at the Sazerac and from culinary school, so I was really green, and I had to make soufflés. Every time
sorry.
I worked the station,
sorry.
I would have sugar on my station and a souffle base, and then you whip the whites and you fold the whites into the base, and then you butter the souffle mold, and then you sugar it. And I ran downstairs. So it's huge. It was in the Fairmont Hotel. It was just a monster matrix kitchen, and I ran downstairs to get more sugar, and what I ended up grabbing was salt. And all night long, I was, and it, you know, souffles, they take 20 minutes, so at the table, the server always asks you if you're going to have a souffle, so they pre-order it, so that when you get towards your entree, they fire it so that you actually get a souffle on time.
Sucks.
And I just kept, I just kept making them in this little convection oven, and they weren't coming out, so I just did what you did. I just kept hiding them and trying to remake them, thinking that eventually I'd catch up, and then after about six of those, I finally tasted it and realized it was salt. And yeah, I got in a lot of trouble for that one. A lot of upset customers.
So basically, I think with restaurants, we need to have like a little hatch door to hide the mistake.
Well, that's a trick for that is make sure you taste everything before you like try to cook with it, you know?
Yeah. That's good advice.
Yeah.
So I think this actually ties in nicely, Zoe, with what you were saying earlier about it being just food. Let's start with you, Ryan. How do you react to a negative review?
Oh, which one? Oh, my God. No, since doing the show, you take blogging with, you know, with ease because they definitely hi all you that are out there. I'm waving to all of them. No, you just, God, I think after $1,000 worth of therapy, I was feeling pretty good about myself on the last review. No, you just, you take it with a grain of salt and understand that everybody is a critic and everybody's going to have an opinion on your food regardless. You're trying to please people, and we're very lucky and very privileged to do what we do. And we feed people on a nightly basis, and we satisfy people. And not a lot of culinary, not a lot of fields do this. You know, music does this, and we do this, and we satisfy people nightly and all the time. So taking critique from people, you have to take it with a grain of salt. And if no pun intended.
I was going to say.
But you got to grow from it, because if you don't find yourself better and saying, you know, forget about that, I'm better than that, and that doesn't do anything about it, you got to look in and delve and find out exactly what it is. And I tried to change, and I changed my menu a lot. And I definitely at Myth Cafe, I took a lot of opinions of what people had on critiques, and I ran with them and changed things that way. So there's negative and positive, but, you know, it's good. Hi, bloggers.
Zoe, how about you?
Well, I feel like, you know, like Ryan said, everyone has an opinion, and everyone has a right to their opinion, including critics. But I feel like every person is just one person. It can be discouraging when you have someone that maybe has a loud voice in a community that has an opinion, and you feel like it's maybe not fair. But I also feel like something that happens that you have to tell yourself, and that hopefully people that are smart, that eat out, that know the real world, that, you know, we're people, we make mistakes too. Yeah. We have really good nights and we have not so good nights. And that's just, we're not robots. This is normal. You know, just like you all have a job, you have good days and you have bad days. Mm-hmm. You don't hear as much of the good feedback as you do the bad feedback. So oftentimes you have to remember that there are many, many people that would eat at your restaurant and have a great night that night that won't say anything. They might tell their friends, they might come back, which is how a business survives. Mm-hmm. And that's our life. I mean, that's how we live. And then there's people that have negative things to say. That's how they live. So that's how I try to think is mostly positive, and negative is negative. So,
Jennifer, any thoughts on that one?
I think since the show, you're just so criticized and you're so conscientious of what not only the judges, but what your peers on the show are thinking as well, you know? It's really... It really breaks you of all that, and really kind of makes you not care so much about, you know, the fact, like Zoe said, that everyone has different opinions, and that's just how it is, and that's how life is. But I got a pretty mediocre review from Michael Bauer at a restaurant I was a chef at, and it was pretty devastating. It haunted me, actually. It haunted me. Now I don't really care that much anymore. But after that, well, this, you know, Top Chef, seriously, it'll crack. You just after that, you just can do anything, seriously. But yeah, it haunted me for a long time. It haunted me to the point where actually when I was opening Coco, I actually didn't want my name to be listed because I was afraid that Michael Bauer would ruin the restaurant just because I got one bad review from him when I was like really young. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to let that happen to this restaurant. I was terrified. Yeah. He's powerful, you know, he could really destroy
Thanks.
Destroy your career.
He hasn't come in yet. I'm excited. Thanks, Jen.
You know what he looks like, right?
Yeah, I know what he looks like. Okay. He's not here.
Do your servers
Yeah, I've been looking the whole time. I'm like, is he here?
He's on jury duty, actually.
Yeah, he is on jury duty. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I Googled it before I came. I'm looking at all you. Don't think I'm not looking.
But jury duty, he'll be done by, you know. What?
Shut up. All right, next question.
So, yeah. So on the on the flip side, then, since you all dine out a lot, how many tries should someone give a restaurant before they write it off?
I think so at least two.
Two.
At least two.
Yeah.
Two sounds good.
Yeah. Two's good. All right.
At least two.
Because you know, even though like, you might decide this is my favorite restaurant, you go there all the time, you'll still go there and have an off night. I just had, I won't say what restaurant, but I went to, and it was like, I was like, what happened? This wasn't really like it. But
the other thing to remember is like, we have off nights as a customer. Like, how many times have we had people come in that you're like, oh god, they're gonna have a horrible night. They haven't even eaten anything yet, but just because they're having a bad night, they're fighting with their partner or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and you're like, oh god, this is gonna be horrible. And then of course they have a bad night. So there's that too. Like,
not all the champagne in the
to
world.
To remember, like, you might go to a restaurant that you had a really fun time at and then go another night and not have as good of a time, and it might be partially your own fault.
That's true.
People.
Believe it or not.
That's the thing, though, Marcia. We have to be on 7 days a week. I mean, it's really nonstop. It's kind of like the show. You know, when the cameras weren't there, we were still going. But we literally, you know, since I took this place over 2.5 months, I haven't had a day off or a break, and we're there. And people expect you to be there for lunch, dinner, and brunch. And they want to see you, and you have to be on from every single dish. And when you're doing 300, you know, plus covers for brunch, and then we're doing 60, 70 for dinner and doing the same for lunch, every person expects it. It's a lot. It really takes a lot from you.
Not a lot of sleep. So no. This will tie in nicely then, and I know you especially love comfort food. Yeah. After these 14-hour days in the kitchen, what is your comfort food, Ryan?
Huh, cheese. I love cheese. I love cheese a lot, and I love beer a lot. Yeah, that's pretty comforting to me. Yeah, I'll tell you that. I love pizza, too. I'm a big pizza fan. And I like it cold. People think that's weird, but cold and ranch dressing, if Hidden Valley's listening to me. Yeah. Plug. Yeah. I love that stuff. Yeah. Pizza all the way.
I love it, too. Yeah. I love it on cold pizza.
Yeah.
Girl. The spicy one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had that stuff all over the house. I don't think Richard ever even had hummus and ranch. And when I went to the house, I don't eat a lot of meat at all. And he's just like, all of a sudden there in the middle of the night eating toasted bread with hummus and ranch. And he's like, you're weird. And I came down the next night, and he's eating it. Uh-huh. I'm like, yeah, I got you, buddy. He's trying to figure out how to levitate it the next day. I was like, what are you doing?
And Ryan, since we are friends and I've chatted with you on the phone a lot and we've hung out, and for those of you that have watched the show, we know sometimes Ryan likes to talk a little bit. You've been really good tonight. I was wondering if I was going to have to break out the bell. So
we're friends, right?
Yeah, we're buds. So it'll just be kicking.
That was cute. She told me she was going to do this. She was going to give me a 15-second, and I had to be quiet when she hit the bell. I still haven't seen the reunion show, and I guess there was a whole pun about me.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it. I've been busy. Yeah, actually, yeah, I'm going to watch it sometime in the next couple weeks. Yeah, was it good?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, man, you got demolished. You got demolished.
I got told I didn't get demolished. Apparently, I got demolished. Yeah, I'm excited to see it.
No,
yeah.
You didn't.
Thanks.
They cut a lot of stuff.
They cut a lot. That took a long time to shoot that show. That was like 4.5 hours to do an hour in.
Yeah, at least.
Grueling. But you didn't see, though, when we were sitting in the back, Eric and I had beers the whole time. So we're like, just bring it on, questions, keep going. It was
peanut
fun.
Gallery in the back.
Exactly.
So, Zoe, how often do you get to cook at home? And when you do, what do you like to prepare? Good Greek girl. We got it.
Right now, I'm not. I mean, it depends on how busy, you know, you are. I don't cook that much right now. I cook mostly at the restaurant. So I eat via osmosis, basically, you know, tasting, whatever. But if I do have time to cook at home, I mean, simple stuff. I mean, I also like ordering Asian food. I'm not trained in Asian kitchen, so I don't attempt to cook Asian food. So I eat Asian food a lot, like to-go food. But other than that, like, simple stuff. I love roasted chicken. I've gotten a lot of shit for that. Like saying I like roasted chicken.
You said the
chicken.
First one.
But, oh, the four-letter word. But I like roasted chicken. It's comforting. It's like, I love that. It's like the first thing I learned how to cook. So to me, that's like nice. So yeah, simple stuff.
Where do you order Asian food from?
Out here, Tongkian.
That's good. Good
for lunch. Yeah, Chinese. You know, wherever. Mm-hmm. Depends on where you are, but there's, you know, depends on your mood. Yeah, Taiyosha for noodles, yeah.
Thanks,
so,
yeah,
Ryan,
trying to figure out what to eat.
It's like the cobbler's son, or cobbler's children have no shoes. You know?
Yeah.
Starving chefs.
Yeah.
Ryan, what's your favorite cheap eat then? And then on the flip side, what's your favorite spendy night out?
Mm. Cheap eat in San Francisco. Wow. Not a lot. Let's see here.
Rapidly diminishing.
No, I'm a huge fan of Za up on Union and Hyde. I think it's the best pizza in San Francisco. It's about this big, and it's like $4 for a slice. What else do I like that was really cheap?
Have they made a Ryan slice yet?
No, they haven't. They're waiting for winter to put butternut squash on it, though, on our pizza challenge. That was a pain, too, man. I also love the Vietnamese sandwich shop down on Polk Street over by the culinary school. It's the worst line in the whole world to wait in, but it's honestly, it's $4 and it's pate and it's delicious and it's really good. It's about the cheapest eats you can get in the city right now. Yeah, La Taqueria, like one taco, like the tongue tacos.
Yeah, just one though.
Yeah.
Two, you're pushing $10.
You're pushing $12 with guacamole and everything else, yeah.
Don't even think about an agua fresca.
No. I said cheap eat, one taco.
Yeah. My friend. So, Jennifer, since you've been doing some catering lately, too, is there a dish that you like to make for parties or when you have a lot of guests coming over? Any easy dishes you can recommend?
Well, at home, I make pasta a lot. I think it's, like, the easiest thing to make. Eggs. You know, like, almost always have eggs in the fridge. For a party...
For
cocktails.
Cocktails, yeah.
We cook all day.
Yeah.
Cocktails.
Yeah, all mostly right. Cocktails.
I'm feeling you're thinking of one. And
also, I could eat a whole thing of salted peanuts. That's a bad one. Actually, the catering thing is just starting. I haven't really... we're doing... a pig roast. That's really exciting. I'm really excited to have a big 150-pound pig on a spit.
All right.
Yeah.
You stuffing it?
I don't think so.
No?
Where are you getting the piggy from?
Yeah, plug it.
I can't remember the name of the farm.
I got it on my BlackBerry.
Do you?
Yeah, I got the email, too, the other day.
You did?
Yeah. It's okay. Good. They're orders now for the pigs.
All right.
Another eat, by the way, the peanut butter pretzels at Whole Foods. If you guys never had them, they're salted. Yeah, that's addicting. You said salted peanuts. I found those on the show, and yeah, they're addicting.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything.
Snackalicious.
Anything with salt.
All right, so Ms. Zoe, we all know about the supposed effects of oysters. What do you cook when you want to get someone in the mood?
Oysters. Oysters, absolutely. Champagne, oysters, caviar.
Caviar, yeah.
Yeah, I like lamb. I think lamb's sexy, so, I mean... But yeah, caviar for sure.
Lamb is sexy.
Champagne,
can we quote you on
lamb.
That? Lamb advisory board.
Raw things like raw fish, I think, is sexy.
Yeah.
Fruit, sexy. You know, not too much garlic, not too much onion.
Yeah.
Unless you're both really gonna eat a lot of it, and then it kind of cancels each other out. But
no beans. You say no beans.
No beans. Yeah, no beans. You don't want to be full. You know what I mean? You don't want to be full and trying to make out. You're all full. You
know. So no porterhouse.
No, it's gonna be like light. You know? Yeah.
Has it been bad enough, like when you want to eat after anyway? You know?
Yeah.
That was good.
And how about you, Ryan, our ladies man?
Booze.
Didn't you just do something?
Yeah. Booze. I don't cook on dates. I don't think I've ever cooked for a date before. No.
Did you do that Valentine's thing at the Ritz?
Oh, yeah. I taught a class at the Ritz-Carlton Half Moon Bay, and it was on Valentine's Day, and it was the Super Bowl Sunday. And there was four guys that were so pissed that their wives drug them there. And then a beautiful audience of all my gay boys and gay lesbians. So I was like, I was so happy. I had the best audience in the whole world. But we did Valentine's Day there. Booze? I had a friend of mine cook for us in the back of their restaurant. And that was cool, just a private table. That was years and years ago. But I've never cooked on a date before. I don't think I've ever have. Champagne.
All right.
Yeah.
A magnum. And I think we're going to start with... Actually, I'd like to hear from each of you on this. Chefs have access to some of the best ingredients and purveyors, many of them organic, local, and sustainable. And what tips do you have for the average person to bring them into our daily routine? I mean, that's the thing that, you know, when I was at Camino recently and I was having dinner, I was like, wow, these are just ingredients I would never have access to. And so I don't know if they're, I mean, you guys, I know you love to go to the market.
I'm a huge market fan.
Yeah.
I went to Berkeley Bowl the other day for an article. Oh my God. I'm telling you, I was just in awe. It was a sea of just beautiful produce. I was in awe there. They have everything from, you know, I broke it up into like islands, you know. There was passion fruit, and there's mama sumata, and there's dragon fruit, and there's things you would never want to use before. And then you look over there, and there's 9 different varietals of cucumbers. So that night at the restaurant, I just did a cucumber salad, and that was it, with just this Bulgarian feta and olive oil and vinegar. And I just love food to be as simple as possible. And let the product, so stupid, I know I say this a lot, but let the product speak to you. Walk in the store, see what's in season. See what the aisles are, you know, what's, you know, melons are crazy right now, berries are crazy right now, and just, I always start with vegetables and fruit first. I build my protein around that, mm-hmm. especially here in California and San Francisco.
I would say just, you know, most of us, well, not most of us, but some of us have cars, and I think that we don't get out enough. I mean, San Francisco is small. Like, there's, you know, Marin Farmers Market, there's Sebastopol Farmers Market, there's Santa Rosa Farmers Market, Healdsburg Farmers Markets. There's a lot of markets out there that are not that far away that are going to show you stuff that you're not going to see here, not even at the San Francisco Farmers Market. So, and also you're going to pay a lot if you shop here. Mm-hmm. And to go there, you're actually going to see the farmer. You're going to see the real farmer, the person that has the product, that grows the product, and you can... It's a different experience. It's more of a real experience. So if you're looking for something that is, you know, real, I mean, Whole Foods has product, but it's not the same experience as going to a farmer's market mm-hmm. and seeing the farmer and being able to have a conversation about why is it this cucumber this week and why is it that cucumber the next week? Because that's exactly what happens. It'll be lemon cucumbers 1 week and then it'll be Armenian cucumbers the next week. So if you're really, like, enthusiastic, like, if you have the day off, it's not that far. It's an hour.
Yeah.
Just take a drive. It's fun. Or go somewhere like, you know, I don't know, Bodega Bay and, you know, have an experience about seafood. Go to the place and have an experience about that place. That's what I would say.
You look at a product a lot different when you know where it comes from.
Yeah.
You don't throw away as easily.
Yeah.
You
know? Like us as chefs, when we actually speak to the farmers about, like, what's going on, what kind of product they have and what they're bringing in, you know, it's like... We hear them say, oh, no, that's just starting to come up right now, and it's going to be ready in, like, 2 weeks. So, you know, then you think, okay, I could put these things on the menu in, like, 2 weeks or run a special with them. But it's, like, having that connection with the farmer and finding out what kind of products they're going to have and what's coming up is you know, a bit, like, you guys can't really do that. But by going to the market, you can have that experience by talking to the farmers. And you're totally right. By going out of town, it's a totally different experience.
Yeah.
I like the Alameda Market.
Yeah.
San Mateo has a good one, too. Yeah. I've been to that one before.
A perfect example is that of that is I have at Zazu, which is in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County. I have been getting these amazing peaches from this guy who has a really small farm. He doesn't even sell to farmers markets. He just has some peaches. And his peaches are some of the best peaches I've ever tasted. I've had a salad on the menu that's peach salad with purslane. And purslane is a weed. Basically that grows, that I love, you can't get it. You can't source it. Like,
well, it's on 24th Street, though, in the Mission.
You can get it on 24th Street. But if you call your produce purveyor, they can't get it for you, but it's a weed. Anyway, so I've been getting purslane and peaches from this guy last week, it got a little bit cold for a couple of days. He couldn't pick the peaches. They weren't ready.
I walked by them.
That's what happens.
They had blossoms there.
I know.
You know? So,
that was weird.
So if I had driven up for that peach salad, I just would have been disappointed.
Where is it?
I bought my produce in Japan.
So,
we're trading shopping tips here.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Somebody stopped me in Japantown the other day. You shop here in Japantown? I said some of the best fruit I've ever found is in Japantown.
Yeah,
I put 12 cases in my car the other day. I was just going to town, and I made chutneys and jams, and there are stone fruit salads, and it's just, I love them. I love being able to pick out the produce myself. My tomato guy drives up in front, and I pick them all out of the truck myself. I love that.
Wait, is this the Italian guy?
Yeah, the one that talks like this.
Yeah, I've heard about that guy.
He doesn't know who you are. Sergio? He just knows you. Sergio, he knows you by your address.
He's connected, that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously.
I've been with...
He spent some time in San Quentin.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And he did. I'm not lying. Seriously.
Yeah. That's good to know.
Yeah, no, really.
Thanks, Jen.
Be careful.
And I don't think it was for tomatoes.
I'm not going to quit that account.
No, don't quit. You can't quit
I'm not going to quit him. Been with them for 6 years.
So, Ryan, since it's an interesting question then, when you're discovering these new ingredients, you know, how do you end up figuring out how to prepare them, especially with some unusual fruits? And I'm sorry if you end up getting a durian.
What's that?
Yeah, no durian fruit.
I'm not going to put durian on my menu. I leave that to people that want to cook with the Asian flair. I picked up a snake. It was called a snake squash. Have you guys seen it yet? I thought it was the weirdest thing in the whole world. And it was about this big. What's that?
Like 2 feet?
Yeah, it was totally phallic. It was horrible. And I was like, what is this thing? So I bought it and I sauteed it off and I made it a succotash out of it instead. I had lima beans and I had that and it was super meaty. You know, I cook it, I taste it, or if it's raw and it's delicious, I think I spent some time with a lady named Susan Goyne down in Los Angeles, and she says it best, you know, you don't need to put anything on if it tastes great. It's nothing wrong with serving. You come to brunch sometimes, and if you all are VIP now, but if I know that you're there, I just serve you melon. And they think it's funny, but the lady in Prune in New York City, what's her name? Gabrielle Hamilton?
Gabrielle, yeah.
I went there one time and she served for dessert a slice of watermelon. I thought it was the weirdest thing in the whole world, but still to this day, I can still taste that watermelon. It is the most delicious thing. So serve the product. It's so dumb. It tells me what it's going to do. I don't know. It's the product speaks for itself. If it's mushy, you're going to make a puree out of it or a soup out of it. If it's great and sustainable and nice and firm, you're going to, you know, have it stand on its own and do something with, you know, a bitter ingredient like a dandelion or a purslane with a peach salad. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. How about you, Zoe? Purslane. It's a weed, but...
It's good.
Well, yeah. No, it's tasty.
It's really good. And
do you just feel like you're just daring with ingredients, or do you... have any resources you depend upon to help?
Well, we're lucky. I mean, we're super lucky living in this area. I mean, we have so many more ingredients than most people have, just in general. But I never stop thinking about food. I never clock out. I mean, I'm constantly thinking about menu, and you know, I'll talk to someone about food, or I'll go out to eat, and something will come up, and then it'll turn into an idea, and then, I mean, we have to try it out. And that goes back to the whole good night, bad night. I mean, you know, part of what we do is we're like scientists, we're trying things out, and sometimes they're really great, and sometimes they're not so great.
They're special.
And then you take them off the menu, you know? I mean, this is what we do. So, I mean, it is partially just kind of like your inspiration. Like, I think if you're, just like anything else, something inspires you, you know, if you paint it or you cook it or whatever. So it's inspiration, that's all. If a tomato inspires you that day, then that's what you cook.
Jennifer, any thoughts on that?
It's interesting sometimes that you know, when you're thinking about food and you come up with a concept and for a dish and then you actually go to make it and you're just like, no, this doesn't work at all. I mean, it's rare and it happens to me. But, it's interesting. Like, I think as a home cook to like really to try new stuff and experiment with it and don't be afraid of it, because you know, who knows, you could come up with something really great as well.
So I have a few questions related to Top Chef, and one is that while taste is certainly a subjective thing, cooking technique and skills are crucial. There have to be some common elements to succeeding as a top chef. What personality traits or non-cooking skills does a person need to really break out from the pack?
You're asking us that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
God.
I think that for the TV show, it's... I have to say I was really naive about what the show going into it. I don't really watch TV. I mean, I've got sucked into watching a ton of TV once I was, like, on the TV. But before that, I never watched reality TV shows, and I didn't really have, like, an idea of, like, exactly what how unreal it is. But yeah, I mean, you definitely have to stick out. And it's personality-wise, and I thought if I just, if it was just all about being the best chef, that you would succeed. And it's not necessarily true.
I think the dynamic of the show changed from the first couple seasons, you know? There was definitely personality in the beginning, and then it was a definite mix on ours. You know, I'm the first to say that this girl should have not gone home that night. I'm not going to delve it back up and pull it back up again, but that was the biggest bunch of BS I've ever seen in my whole life. And that's, I think we questioned a little bit of, is it cooking? Is it reality? Is it this or that? But what it comes down to is the fact is we are real people. We are chefs. We do cook for a living, and we do thrive in what we do. And there's just some people in the back that make it happen, and that's you know, that's who they chose. But you know, don't overthink it. God, don't go on there and try to do chicken piccata 7 different ways, you know? And know what the hell chicken piccata is before you go on, too, which is a good thing. But you forget the simplest stuff, Marcia. Oh, my God. It's like you forget how to do rice when you're on there because you have 7 cameras in front of you and people are running around you. And
well, that's the other thing is we're not actors.
No, we're not.
We're not actors. So, like, you know, we're being put, like, under the strain of cooking and performing, and then we're also being asked to be entertaining and good actors, and it's a difficult thing. Plus, you know, you're completely out of your element. It's a tremendous amount of pressure. And so, I mean, some of us, I think, are better at performing in that way and cooking under those kinds of circumstances. I, for one, do not. I have no intention or desire to cook in terms of performance, in terms of, like, I'm supposed to look good and look good for the camera, and it's not about that for me. For me, it's about the food, and it's about people coming in and eating the food, and nobody got to do that except for the judges, and that was, my performance was affected by my anxiety, obviously. You know, and of course they'll say, well, you know, you're under pressure in the kitchen. Well, I'm not in a kitchen. I'm in a studio. You know, I'm not in a kitchen.
Yeah.
I'm not in a kitchen. So that's the thing is, like, you know, everyone performs differently under different types of pressure. And I think some people excelled more under those restraints, you know. So that's all.
What about you, Jennifer? Were there some character traits that you thought, you know, really helped people stand out more on the show? Or?
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I think that if you look at the final five, there's definitely, you know, the villain, the bitch, the scientist, the all-American girl.
The guy that wore the hat the whole show.
You know.
Yeah, Spike.
Have you guys ever made jokes about?
Not that I couldn't have fallen into any of those, you know, categories.
Have you figured out what you were typecast as?
Oh, shit. I'm leaving that one alone.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we can all answer that pretty easily. Yeah.
What was that? I'm sorry.
We can all answer that one pretty easily, I think. Yeah.
So if you had to nominate 3 up-and-coming San Francisco chefs to go on Top Chef.
Oh, I wouldn't nominate nobody to go on the show. No, don't do
Interesting.
It. Who would I nominate to go on the show?
Yeah, I was going to get my sous chef to go on, and then he got cold feet at the end. Because they ask you for the recommendations.
It's the whole thing. You know, they're getting deeper and deeper than us. What's 5 is being taped right now, and 6 is on its way. And they want personality, they want looks, they want cooking, they want top-notch people, you know? So I wouldn't be surprised if James Beard Award winners are food and wine people that don't start popping up in the next year or so.
I actually don't agree with that, though. I don't think it should be people that are already successful in their careers. I think that show would be better if it was young people, culinary students.
Yeah, but they had Rich
on. That's how it started more like people that – a more variety of range in terms of people and skill. It's – I mean, you know, this season, 16 of us
were all
successful
chefs.
And it's like, this should be, I mean, it's a show about, you know, kind of showing off, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's good for, like, someone who's green or a culinary student to play around and show off. I mean, you know, those of us that are already, I mean, I know for some of us, it was very difficult to leave our work and very difficult to come back to work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we both know.
What was
We both know.
So, you know, maybe it's better for someone who doesn't have, I mean, we're chefs. It doesn't really make sense for us to leave. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're working 7 days a week.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And then you throw us in a house with all of us and cameras right off the bat.
I mean, I think it would be better for a younger group of people and just have it be more fun.
Just like more novice.
We're too stressed out.
Yeah, we are.
Ryan's got a good therapist if you need a number. Someone might need the number for that therapist.
Plus, we take everything really personally, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, a younger person, they can kind of take the digs a little bit better. That's what they're, you know, that's, I mean, it's good when you're young. You know, you want to be told, like, this is good, this is not so good, you know? So
you feel that? So as you get older, you're more sensitive?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
It's good, your craft.
Yeah.
So if you could tweak the show to be different, then you would like to make it more of a sous chef level, or pit some line cooks,
just younger,
like gladiator style.
Just younger, just a little bit younger. I think it would still be equally entertaining. I think there's plenty of young talent that could perform as well as we could.
Yeah, just, I mean, if this show was around when I was like 25,
not to say that they could run our restaurants. That's awesome, a whole different game.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. So, after being told to pack your knives and go, who did you want to win the competition? Let's start with you, Ryan.
I wanted I wanted Jen to win because she was still on, right? And Antonia, I was digging Antonia's style, and definitely Steph. I thought Steph had it from the first dish. It was insane. That girl does not believe in herself. She does now, yeah, but she was always second-guessing herself. She's so talented, and her flavor profiles are really insane. And I really didn't get the chance to really work with her a lot until the other day when we did the tour in Fremont, right? Thank you. We did, like, four cities. And then she's insane. I love her. Her restaurant's going to rock. I'm so excited for it to open. Just well-deserved, majorly well-deserved.
That was a good win for you. Yeah,
I'm so happy when she won.
Yeah. How about you, Zoe?
Well, I mean, I think Jen should have won, for sure. I mean, anybody that knows totally should have won, for sure. But
I think a lot of people.
If she wasn't going to be on the show, then, or you know, not part of the competition after Ryan, of course.
Thank you.
I mean, I think Steph, Antonia, and Blaze. Those are. I mean, they definitely were deserving to be in the top. They were definitely all really talented, awesome chefs. Sure.
Yeah, I think. Absolutely. I mean, who it came down to were all, in those final three, I think.
Was Lisa in the
final? We're all really talented. I think it could have easily been, you know, Dale could have been in that circle as well.
He's good. He's so good.
Yeah.
Dale should
have
been in the top five.
Dale should have been in the top five for sure. And, well, so should have, we all should have, but,
there's only so many spots.
Yeah. But I think Steph is very talented.
Yeah.
And Steph, totally happy for her. And
Steph's, I think, showed the most range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
Like she showed a tremendous
that
range.
That wedding cake?
Yeah. I mean, my God.
That was insane.
Wedding chops.
Yeah. Get it.
She didn't have the fondant made. It was made already, but still, she rocked it out. That cake was insane.
Yeah.
It's better than Lisa's.
I didn't say it.
Yeah, I did.
So we're going to be taking questions soon. So for those of you that want to ask some questions, feel free to start lining up at the microphone now.
Wow, that's quick. I know you.
Jennifer, what are Tom and Padma like? Did you talk with them much outside of what
we
saw on TV?
I've known Tom for a long time, and but on
that's
the
right,
show,
you're a New York girl.
On the show, we didn't really, you know, broach that. But then when I did the when we did the A-List Awards, it was kind of refreshing because we actually had a nice 20-minute conversation about the presidential election. So it was kind of brought me back, like, oh, he's, you know, it's part of the show too. You know, he's a talented chef, and he's a, you know, he's a guy, he's a good guy. And then Padma, you know, I wish I got more time with her and got to know her a little bit better on the show. But then again, like at the A-List Awards, she was more like human. Mm. Like, just like really, you know, actually was like, hello, Jennifer. How are you? You know, like just, you know, like actually tried to have a conversation with me as opposed to just, you know, being her fantastic self on the show. So I'm okay with both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're part of the show.
TV. How about you, Ryan?
No comment.
No?
Nope. No
Were
comment.
You flirting with Padma?
No. too tall. No comment. Okay. I saw him at Food and Wine. The show was still out, so we weren't really supposed to converse a lot, and I saw him at Carmel Food and Wine, and it was interesting. Gail's a sweetheart. I love Ted to death. Ted's a good guy. That's it. I'll leave it at that.
And Zoe, what about your thoughts on Tom and Padma?
I don't have any idea who they are. I don't know them. You know what I mean? In terms of our relationship on the show, there wasn't one. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were not allowed to converse in any way. You saw an edited version, but pretty much what you saw is the kind of conversations that we were allowed to have. There was no like, hey, Tom, so seriously, did you really think that sucked? There was none of that. Uh-huh. I mean, really, chef, can you tell me what I could have done better? I mean, there was none of that. I mean, you know, there was a separation, there was a wall, and they were doing their job and we were doing our job. And so in terms of having an opinion about them as a person, Tom is a, you know, well-respected chef who deserves his opinion, and Padma is a woman that deserves her opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
That's good.
So this is literally a burning question. Is it impossible to get a good crusty sear on a frozen scallop?
Yes.
What I do is I take dry shiitakes and I put them in a VitaPrep and I pulse them until it's a crust, and I find that when you roll them in something that would give them a little bit of crust on the outside versus panko or flour or something, gets them something to adhere to a little bit more, and I sear my scallops with a shiitake
frozen.
Crust.
She said frozen.
I know. I'm wondering if it will work. I will not use a frozen scallop. There's no way. She's talking about spike.
Yeah.
It's a little pun on spike. I don't think you can. There's too much moisture. But maybe if you try the other route.
Oh, dehydrator for like 15 minutes.
I don't know why he used those, but man, he went after Tramado. Holy moly. Did he not?
Yeah.
Did you see that episode? Oh, that was bad.
All right, you guys. Well, we are now going to roll to some audience questions. Everyone be nice. All right. Let's start with you.
Thank you all for coming in. You guys have talked a little about like roles and editing and your experience on the show. So what I want to ask is, what's the one thing about you that we didn't get to see on the show that you wish we had seen?
More of me? No, sorry. I'm kind of a goofball and like clowny and always joke around and try to have fun in the kitchen, and I feel like that didn't really get to come out because we're just too stressed out, and I think that would have been a fun element for the show.
Zoe?
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I think I have, you know, I have a point of view, and I think that certainly being from California, not originally from California, but being in California now, I don't think that the show is very West Coast-centric. I think it's definitely more East Coast-centric and plays to that kind of styling, which, you know, I don't have anything against, but I was talking to a friend when I got back from the show, and they were like, I felt so bad when I saw that you're on the show because I knew you didn't have a chance. Like, you know, you go get a nice tomato, you put really good salt on it and really awesome olive oil, and you're like, here's my thing.
Yeah.
That's never going to win. You know, so, I mean,
unless we get Alice Waters as a judge
right,
on the
exactly.
show.
I was like, please, come on.
I was praying for her all episodes.
Peach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there's my point of view.
We
I felt
won.
Like didn't fully get to be expressed. That's disappointing, not for me personally as much as for a broader kind of, you know, impression. Ryan?
Yeah.
Let's get it, Ryan.
Hold the bell. This is going to take a second. I didn't get to show diversity at all. I didn't get to show what I can really do. And I got stuck with a freaking salad and pasta and stuff. But the whole fact is, it's like, what's really great now is this has catapulted us to a point where there's notoriety that people are going to fill our seats, which in this economy right now is great. And I love that. And my restaurant now is my new show and my new venue to show people what I can do. And I'm really stoked about that.
So before we jump to the next question, I just want to announce as a reminder that this is Commonwealth Club's Inforum program. And tonight we're hosting Top Chef's Tell All. I'm Marcia Gagliardi of TableHopper.com.
Yeah.
And I'm here with Zoe Antonitsis, chef restaurant consultant currently at Zazu Restaurant in Santa Rosa, Jennifer Beastie, chef restaurant consultant, formerly of Coco 500, and current proprietor of Savage Feast Catering, and Ryan Scott, executive chef partner at Mission Beach Cafe.
Nice. Good plug.
Oh, should we be able to, we'll flip-flop on the room side here. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to say, first off, having worked in the restaurant business in New York for 10 years, and anyone who's worked on the line knows how hard you guys work, mm-hmm. and it's probably one of the hardest jobs out there. And,
where'd you work?
I worked at Daniel's when I was in college.
Danielle?
Got fired. Yeah,
I got there too.
Fired my second day. I was a waitress, and there's a whole thing of soup going over a bald guy's head.
Mm-hmm.
Nasty story. But
wow.
Anyway.
It's a tattoo now.
I'm just curious as to where do you guys see the innovation in cooking happening now? Is it San Francisco? Is it Barcelona? Is it France? Is it New York? Where do you see like some of the really cool stuff coming out in food?
Well, I feel like in a lot of ways San Francisco is so ahead of New York, but it's just New York is now becoming more like San Francisco as far as how it deals and approaches product. I think that, you know, the whole green trend is actually becoming a lifestyle, and as in New York and Chicago are becoming, realizing how important that is. So it's kind of interesting to have San Francisco influencing someplace like New York. And then that's something that has always existed in Europe, you know, but I do feel like that, that Spain is, you know, kind of taking that on in a different way, and that Spain is actually becoming more into, is becoming more like New York, but also being affected, but it already had that kind of, like, effect of using just local products and stuff like that. So I think it is interesting that San Francisco's lifestyle or philosophy on food is now affecting New York.
I think it's great that we have people like Daniel Patterson at Qua that, you know, push the envelope a lot. But I leave that to him, you know, and let him do his thing. And I'll go there and have, you know, 12 courses at his restaurant. I'm not going to do that. That's just not my style. The way I want to cook is the way I cook now. And I see the momentum of what I'm doing right now in the Zuni realm, and the places that I want sustainability. I want something that's going to last for the next 20 years. And I think if you stick true to what we've been eating and the classics and just do little tiny little spins, I see longevity in the cooking world. And there's always going to be the Wiley Dufresne's at WD-50, which is a phenomenal restaurant. I love it to death. But when I go to New York, I eat there. And I'll eat here at Qua when I want to go that realm. But I like where the food's at right now. I like the fact that it's not just the product. It's recycling. It's where's your grease going to. It's breaking down your cardboard and sending it out to other people and making sure that it's biodegradable and all that other stuff. I was just doing an event the other day, and it's like cooking is not just cooking anymore. It's, you know, where's the waste going to? Because it's building up, and it's building up really quick, and we need to watch it. And I think that's what's really great, and not over-ordering and not throwing stuff away. And, yeah, hit the bell. I'm done. All right.
I would just say also, like, you know, people, we have a tendency to talk about San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Paris, Barcelona. There's a lot of other cities that are doing really awesome food, too, that are smaller. There's all of Middle America that are doing... when we talk about locality, I mean, you know, there are a lot of places that are doing innovative stuff in their region. You know, I'm from Seattle. Seattle's totally booming mm-hmm. when it comes to the food scene. Portland's totally booming when it comes to the food scene. So there's, like, a lot of other places that are not necessarily the, like, star cities that you could really go and have really amazing food with like, purveyors nearby... farmers nearby, chefs that are hands-on. So there's that to think about, too, that it's not just New York, San Francisco. There's a lot of other cities here.
Great.
That was a good question.
Next question.
You obviously are all very good chefs, but you also, I've noticed, as makes sense, you have substantial restaurant experience. How important is the business of running a restaurant to being a good chef, and does the business side of it ever conflict? And sort of what are some pointers that you've seen on that? Because I, being from San Francisco, I see how competitive it must be out there with all the different restaurants.
Yeah, I think, no, it is. It's really competitive. And it's not easy to own a restaurant in the city because it takes so many people to really make it happen. And if you can design a menu and say, I want to do all this stuff. But, I mean, the amount of time it takes to shell a case of fresh cranberry beans or black-eyed peas and then the cost of that actual product, and then, you know, paying the person to do it, and, you know,
and rent,
and rent, and health insurance, and the minimum wage, and all that. It just it's really hard. So as far as the clash between business and creativity, it sometimes can be hard, because you will often take a job. A restaurant owner will find a chef because they know that this chef will bring them business, and that's why the owner wants to hire the chef, because they're talented and they know they'll have a following. But they're also, the only thing they're thinking about is the
money.
Cost. And, of course, to be a good chef, you have to be able to run a successful restaurant as well. But it takes a lot of manpower to make a lot of things happen like that, you know? I mean, so there is often a clash between the owner and the chef because, you know, the owner only sees the, you know, $3,000 produce bill, and the chef sees, I got all this cool stuff to play with, you know what I mean? So that's definitely a clash. For sure. But yeah, it's really competitive out there. It's hard. The city's hard to open business in.
It's a good city to do it in, though. It's not, it's so hard. I'm learning that right now. I mean, crow's feet, no sleep, you name it. It's coming on big time. And, you know, just scheduling to salaries to the fact when I was at Gary Danko 5 years ago, I mean, I was getting paid a really small amount. And when I left, I was as highest paid line cook. Now my dishwasher's making what I left when I went to Gary Danko. It's disturbing. You know, that bothers me really bad. But he knows how to shuck some garbanzo beans, I'll tell you what. He's doing pretty good. But you have to watch out for that stuff, you know. And the people wonder why, you know, like Bar Jules is a favorite restaurant of ours. I definitely love it to death. But she does it with a really small line and a really limited menu. There's a reason why she's doing it. She's playing the card very smart. She's going to be around for a long time, you know.
I would just say, like, I'm certainly not, I can't speak on it because I don't have as much business experience. But I think, for me, it's difficult to think about having a place in the city because there are so many obstacles. There's so much competition, and we're constantly hungry here. It's a transient place. Being a city generally has somewhat of a transient. And there's always going to be another new place. So there's that kind of constant competition out there, regardless of whether or not you are a place that has respect and loyalty. There's going to be that constant. So for me, just speaking for myself, I know that it's something that I've definitely thought about because I want to have a place that is not a burden, that it's something that is, you know, a love and a passion. So I think a lot of it has to do with finding the place, be it the right neighborhood or be it the right city. And try to do it, you know, with integrity and do it yourself. I mean, I think that, you know, chef owners, in my experience, have the restaurants that I respect the most. And because there's kind of it all ties together. When you have a chef and an owner, some of those issues dissipate. Money is always an issue, but some of the issues dissipate a little bit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
It's Rick Banger.
Thanks. Hey, Beastie.
What's up, Binger? How are you?
So here's my question. If you put aside all of the fame and fortune and being recognized walking down the street and
when's
all of that
happening?
Stuff. Yeah, I've heard rumors. So if you put all that aside that you got out of the show, is there anything that you learned on the show or anything that happened on the show that changed the way you prepare or present food now?
That's a really good question.
When I first came back, I started doing a lot of weird stuff at Coco.
Giving yourself quick
but
fires.
Then it was just I still do that. I gave it, that's why I was late today. I was totally on a quick fire
challenge.
I'm
going to bust out this egg salad.
But yeah, I started doing some stuff that wasn't, and then I realized it wasn't really my style. Why would I deviate from something that's already embedded in me? But I played around with some science stuff. But then I was like, why? This, like, you know, like if you have a sauce and you take a paintbrush and you go like this with it, is that going to taste any better than if you just put it on there?
The sauce swoosh.
You answered it.
So you'd say no, you're exactly the same.
As far as cooking?
Yeah.
No.
Changed. I think it changed us. I think personally. I mean, my life has changed 100 million percent. And I think it's, you know, if you take it with stride, and I've gotten to be a better person, me, Ryan, as a person, and accepted who I am, and you sit there and watch yourself, and as your phone blows up 300 times every Thursday night, you know, people saying, why did you do this, why did you do that, and you just, and then you question yourself, and it's such a great learning experience, and if you can't be better from this show, then you didn't really get what it was about, because the respect that you're getting from people and the fact that it's actually filling seats where we work is a great thing. So now it's our turn to step up and really show what we got.
For me, it just kind of, I think it, I did not have a good experience, I would say. When I came back, I was definitely not in a good space. And I had to kind of work out of that, because, you know, it's a lot of pressure, like we were saying before, obviously. And you do feel like you failed on some level. Mm-hmm. But what I had to do is really, like, look at what is it that I really do believe in? What is it that I really do want to cook? And because if you're not doing that, then it's just total pointless waste of time, waste of life. I mean, our job is our love. They're one and the same. And so if you're not doing what you love as much as possible, then you're not doing your job. So that's, to me, like, I've tried really hard to just say, I understand that this maybe is not the norm. This maybe isn't for everyone, but this is for me. And this is my life. So that's what I'm going to do. That was a big lesson. So that's probably what I took from it the most.
Would you do it again?
Hell no.
Is that across the board?
No, I would do it again.
You'd do it again?
Oh, yeah, totally.
All right.
Yeah, we're waiting for the reunion show call, I'll tell you that. Yeah. Yeah, I'd do it again. I'd go in a little different. I wouldn't cook like the people that were next to me. I'd cook like me. I was trying to...
I'd be all crazy person. Look at me over here. Starting fights.
All right, yeah. We want more brawling, yeah.
We were close a couple times.
Bring it on. All right, thank you.
Hi, I'm Chris, and first off, I'd just like to say that, you know, being a Top Chef fan, from season one, I thought that regardless of who won, all three of you brought all of San Francisco's
very
values
nice.
Thank you.
To a national stage, so really tops off to you guys on that. And my question is, taking out the immunity factor and the elimination factor, which one did you enjoy more, the quick fire or the main challenge? And also, which did you think was a better test of your culinary skills?
Well, I like the quick fires because you got to work alone.
Yeah.
There were so many group efforts. There were so many group efforts that it was really hard. So that's partially why I like the quick fires more.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure, though. I mean, literally 30 minutes to do it all, or even 20 when they had to do it on that one. But I had to say quick fires. When we were all on that, which one were we all on, the three of us? Which one was that? When we were on that group, you know, which one was it?
I don't know.
Oh, that was the
block
blocked
party. It out.
The block party, the second episode. I mean, we looked at each other, and I respect these two very much, like crazy. But, you know, none of us know each other. All we know is I was a huge fan of her restaurant. And that's it. And we don't know each other. And we're going in there and cooking with, you know, all these different opinions. I mean, that menu changed 100 million times upstairs, you know, when we're on the roof. And when you do a quick fire, you're by yourself and you kind of get to show what you got. So
yeah, I think definitely like what Jen and Ryan just said, basically that for a lot of us, it was frustrating to have to be in team situations again and again and again. And obviously, you know, they'll say, you know, when you're working in the kitchen, it's a team. It's like, yeah, but... We're not here to be like, this is not my restaurant. This is not my team. We're competitors. Right. So, like, you know, it was nice in the quick fires because you could just do your own thing. Obviously, 30 minutes is not enough, that much time to do your own thing, but a little bit of time. Also, less time to stress out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was days, like some of those challenges. I mean, it was like really hours and hours and hours of processing and talking to people. And it's like, you can't overprocess, and that happened too, I think, quite a bit.
Yeah, the first one, the pizza one, we had an hour and a half to make that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me. That was way too much time to think about a pizza. And you just, way too much time. You just gotta keep it simple. The Danielle one that you did really well on, that one was shaky too, because people were, you know, cooking for Daniel Blue is no joke. And I've never seen people more nervous in my life. That was scary. Yeah.
You can attest to that, huh, Ryan?
I can contest to that, yeah, all 3 months. You know after 2 days, wherever you're at, there you are.
All right, well, let's give a big hand to the panelists.
Good job.
You've all definitely earned some cocktails outside there. So since I failed to actually bang the gavel in the beginning, I'd like to declare this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club adjourned.
Thanks, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thanks, Marcia.